And welcome into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, of course, right here on the radio with you. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's what we do at VeritasMedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, Wade. How are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to have you back on the show this Monday morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we got lots of things to get into today. Of course, Morley Robbins also will be joining us in the program today on the show. And so lots of good stuff. I might add that I did watch your five-minute testimony before the Senate in Austin last Wednesday, Thursday?
Thursday, yep.
That was pretty cool. I watched that online. You did a great job there. Had some questions from good senators. And
thank you.
You want to tell us a little bit about what that was all about, Dr. Edwards?
Yeah, I got a call from Senator Bob Hall. And, you know, the day before, he got last-minute notice that his bill was going to have a hearing. So he needed some physicians to testify on behalf of his bill, and basically his bill is to prevent businesses from mandating the COVID-19 vaccine for their employees, and I believe customers too. So myself and Dr. Richard Bartlett and Dr. Amy Offit, and then there's Dr. Angie Ferrella. She's a pediatrician at my Houston. So the four of us showed up and testified. We got 5 minutes each. So that was interesting.
Five minutes.
Yeah. I've got a lot to say, as you know.
I don't know how you can do it in 5 minutes.
Well, me neither. My staff laughed and said, there's no way you barely get started in 5 minutes. So, and you know, there's not a lot you can say. But the point I was trying to make was, obviously, this is an experimental gene therapy, not even officially a vaccine. It's a new technology. It's in the emergency authorization stage. It's not FDA approved. And the definition of evidence-based medicine, as I pointed out in the testimony, and this is from Sackett, Strauss, and colleagues back in 2000, and evidence-based medicine is comprised of three things. The best researched evidence, which we'll talk about with Morley here in a second, with clinical expertise and patient value. So you take into consideration all three things: the published data, your clinical experience as a physician, and the patient's values or wishes. And patient wishes trump the other two. And clinical experience trumps the best research evidence. And you got to put that in quotes, best research evidence. I was just listening to Dr. Peter McCullough, who's finally getting some airtime on a little bit of mainstream media. He was on Tucker Carlson after a year. Finally, he's getting a little airtime. And he was pointing out to Tucker, and Tucker couldn't believe it. He's like, what? This can't be a true story, but it's absolutely a true story. And it's a Lancet article that came out that said hydroxychloroquine is deadly and dangerous, and everybody stop it. Don't use it. And it turns out that was a fake research from a fake company, a fake journal article. How did it get through into the Lancet, one of the most prestigious journals in the world? Oh, I don't know. Because when they finally retracted it 2 weeks later, after the damage was done, all they said was, we couldn't verify the data. We retract this. No explanation, no apology, no anything. How can you just let a fake paper get through into a journal like that? And Dr. McCullough had some very interesting comments about that. But my point is, this quote-unquote best research evidence, you have to be careful. I mean, there's a book coming out. I hope to get the author on a show later. But it's all about the corruption in this evidence-based medicine research world. The drug companies write the research, and then they go seek out these influencers, you could call them, basically these academic physicians at the most prestigious universities. And if you can get this guy from this institution, say Harvard, or wherever, Stanford, Hopkins, Mayo, Baylor in Dallas, you get them to author your paper, then you've got cred. But the research is coming out of the drug companies. So this fascinating book about the corruption in medicine, and I've quoted both the New England Journal of Medicine editor-in-chief, former ever editor-in-chief, and Dr. Marcy Angel, quote, "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my two decades as editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine," Dr. Marcy Angel. And then from The Lancet, Dr. Richard Horton. He's the editor of The Lancet, former editor. "Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue. Afflicted by studies with small sample size, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analysis, and flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for pursuing fashionable trends of dubious importance, science has taken a turn towards darkness." So those are two leading editors in two of the most prestigious journals. And that's why you have to be careful. Physicians have to be careful with just following this quote-unquote best research evidence. Because a lot of times it's biased, or it's only half the story, or we don't fully understand, and the next shoe's got to drop 10 years from now when some other research comes out that contradicts the previous research. It was a former dean of Harvard that told the graduating class, "Hey, we just taught you a bunch of stuff, but half of it was wrong." And, you know, unfortunately, we don't know which half. So y'all've got to go out into your career and continue to practice and discern and use your clinical judgment. So anyways, I mentioned that in my testimony, obviously not that in-depth. And then I mentioned the Nuremberg Code, the UN International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Article 7, the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 3, and the Universal Declaration of Bioethics and Human Rights, Article 6. All four of these documents are being violated if you coerce someone to take a vaccine, force or coerce. So I mentioned that. And then really what I wanted to point out to these senators was what's not being talked about anywhere that I see. Although Dr. McCullough did get to finally get it out there on Tucker's show, people are shocked when they learn that vaccines over the last 20 years, the vaccine adverse event reporting system has reported 4,182 deaths over the last 20 years from all vaccines combined. Just over 4,000 deaths. We just surpassed the 4,000 mark in the last 4 months with one vaccine, the COVID-19 vaccine. More people are being reported on VAERS as dying from associated with COVID-19 vaccines in the last 4 months than the whole last 20 years combined. It's unbelievable. In the last report, there was a 15-year-old boy from Colorado, two 16-year-old girls from Wisconsin, a 17-year-old girl from Wisconsin, 17-year-old from New Hampshire, two girls in Virginia. Dead within hours to days of taking the corona shot, the COVID-19 shot. And I read over the weekend, a two-year-old little baby, perfectly healthy. She's dead in Virginia. Just read this morning, and I'm just talking deaths, much less the thousands and tens of thousands of injuries and probably hundreds of thousands. 17-year-old boy in Draper, Utah, Corner Canyon High School, ended up in the ICU with blood clots in his brain. What's a 17-year-old boy doing getting this shot? These are healthy kids. COVID-19 doesn't affect kids. The kids get it. Don't even know they have it.
I mean,
that's a good question. Why is any kid, and beyond that, really any adult? But and the point that Amy Offit made after me in her testimony was informed consent. If people knew, and Dr. Bartlett ahead of me pointed out that budesonide, the Oxford study showed a 90% reduction in hospitalization if you take inhaled steroid, budesonide. We didn't even get into ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and the 85% reduction in mortality with those. So if you have effective treatments, if you have truly informed consent, if people knew that over 4,000 people have died already, and that's a very underestimated, probably according to Harvard study from a few years ago, only 1% of adverse events are even reported to VAERS because it's a self-reporting system. The healthcare worker gets on there and reports it if they want to. Only 1% get reported. I've had numerous people contact me to say my next-door neighbor, my aunt, my son-in-law's boyfriend or girlfriend died 2 days after the shot, but it's not reported. They just had a heart attack. They just had a stroke. They just died in their sleep. Not reported to VAERS. So if that 1% is accurate, it's not 4,000. It's 40,000. So it's really unfortunate that this isn't getting more press, and I think it's because we've made the enemy vaccine hesitancy. It's like the whole public health world and doctors that aren't informed, their whole goal is reduce vaccine hesitancy. That's the mortal enemy, is vaccine hesitancy.
Well, they're not doing themselves any favors when you see a joint statement to Congress and you've got the President of the United States who's vaccinated. Everybody in that room is vaccinated, but required to wear a mask and socially distance. And
none
only
of that makes sense.
And if you're going to do all that, then yet project to the public that this vaccine is safe, take it.
Yep.
Then if you're out there and you haven't taken the vaccine and you see what your leaders are doing, actions speak louder than words. Well, why in the heck would I take a vaccine if I'm still going to have to wear a mask and socially distance everywhere? Does that make sense?
Zero. None of this makes sense. There's no logical, righteous sense making out of any of this. Last thing, then we'll bring Morley in. 1976 swine flu epidemic. They rushed out a experimental swine flu vaccine in 1976. Around 500 people got Guillain-Barré, the paralysis, and about 25 people died. And they pulled it off the market because of that. 25. There's over 4,000 and possibly up to 40,000 people died associated with COVID-19, according to VAERS.
Well, the U.S. Army pulled the smallpox vaccination off the market in 2005 when they started to vaccinate U.S. Army personnel going to Iraq, when over 50 years of age soldiers were having cardiac events.
Yeah.
And if you had eczema, had nasty reactions to that particular smallpox vaccine, and some died, and the U.S. Department of Army said, we got to yank this thing.
Yeah, so it's really unbelievable, to the point people really seriously don't even believe me. They don't believe what I'm saying. And if my testimony were recorded and put onto Facebook, it would be censored and pulled off for false information.
That's true. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but I mean, that's true. If you tried to share that on Facebook right now, it would be pulled down under fact checkers.
So obviously we're living in a dark time where deception and half-truths and outright lies abound. So people need to be discerning. Okay, Morley, I was saying the enemy, what they're making the enemy is vaccine hesitancy. And I was going to say when the real enemy is coronavirus, but no, that's not even true.
We're way beyond that.
The real enemy is all the deception over the last 100 years, or really thousands, but we'll zero into the last 100 years, that have compromised the integrity of the human body's ability to defend itself. Do you want a perfect recipe to make yourself susceptible to coronavirus and every other virus? People are calling me now, what do I do? I got the vaccine and I want to protect myself from the ill effects of it. And I'm getting calls from people because now there's this shedding issue. People that have been vaccinated are shedding potentially the spike protein in these RNA to non-vaccinated, and it's affecting non-vaccinated. Which, by the way, in the Pfizer trial, they even mentioned this. You weren't allowed to have intercourse with your spouse if you were in the vaccine trial. If pregnant ladies even were in the same room with someone in the vaccine trial, they had to report it. Anyways, so now there's all these questions about shedding. I'm not vaccinated, and I think I'm healthy, but what about all this shedding? So what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Well, the same thing we've always said to do. Focus on what you can control, and that's your optimization of your own internal terrain. Boost the immune system. Unfortunately, when most doctors say boost the immune system, they're saying take zinc, selenium, synthetic vitamin C, ascorbic acid, synthetic vitamin D. Not the right answer. We got to go deeper. God's original intent, his original design, the food he gave us to be our medicine, whole food vitamin C, cod liver oil with the A and D in a perfect ratio in a natural form, get some sunlight, get the magnesium so you can convert your sunlight into vitamin D, don't be inflamed, get your iron down, go donate blood to get your iron down because we've been eating extra iron since 1940. It's these basic things. It's the same old thing we're saying over and over and over and over, and it sounds too simple. All right, Morley, sorry. Going on a tangent here, but we're going to go all the way to 10:15, I think, because we started late. But so we got plenty of time.
Okay. And I'm with you.
I want to just
let me build on your passion, if I may.
Yeah, please.
To emphasize the point that Sherry Tenpenny makes, it is not a vaccine. Stop using that word. It is a shot, an experimental shot. Don't use vaccine ever again. with this particular chemical. Secondly, it is not shedding. It is transmission. Viruses shed. Experimental shots transmit toxic material. So these are important things for people to stop using these conditioned words that are considered safe when in fact it's a shot that's transmitting a spike protein that we don't even know what it's doing. So what we're witnessing right now is nothing short of the hijacking of humanity. It's that simple. That is the crime. That's the ultimate crime, is the hijacking of humanity. And as Mark Twain once said, it's easier to fool the people than to convince them that they've been fooled. Now, a slight adaptation to that quote is, it's easier to fear the people than convince them that they've been feared. Now, let me build on this a little bit. Everything to do with 2020 and its aftermath is pure psyops. And if you don't know what that term means, look up psychological operations. It is used extensively by military intelligence to try to take control of populace, of civilians. This is the hijacking of humanity. Now, three famous people are quoted as having said this. Probably the one that most people will know is Winston Churchill. If you don't learn from history, you will repeat it. And that's exactly what we're up against. And Ben, I'm so grateful that you brought up the Nuremberg trials, because that's the epicenter of this, that's the cornerstone, I should say, for this whole thing. These trials took place in 1945 and 1946. Only 17 Germans were actually on trial, and only a few actually lost their life, which is, we could have a day-long discussion about that. But what's important is that Goering, the minister of propaganda, was asked how the German population became so manipulated. And his response was chilling. He said, it's really quite simple. You create fear, and they will do anything to lower their fear. Ladies and gentlemen, we're right back to wartime Germany. And you don't even realize that they're playing you for the fool, for the fear that you are. And as you pointed out, Ben, Articles 3, 6, and 7 clearly state that there can be no human experimentation, i.e. shot, without consent. So we are repeating history now. We are in the gulag, and there's no barbed wire fence. It's an electric fence called social media. People don't realize that basically we're all in prison now with this toxic hijacking of humanity. So let's talk about fear for a minute. I spell it differently. FEAR, so we can unmistakably recognize the symbol for iron. And what most people don't know is that when you are in a state of fear, you are attracting iron. And any farmer can tell you that acidic soil attracts iron. And as soon as you go into a state of fear, your pH goes acidic. And so that's an important thing to know, is that when you are in a state of fear, you're attracting iron. A very important study was done by Dr. Zaman Pira in 2019, where they were talking about the emotions of fear creating hypoxia, and that we think means low oxygen. What it means is the inability to metabolize oxygen, and it highlights the role that both adrenaline and cortisol play in creating the metabolic state of hypoxia. And what most people don't know is that adrenaline is really keyed up with iron. And cortisol's job is to try to protect potassium status. But what it also does is it triggers a 4- to 5-fold increase in a protein from our liver called metallothionein. Metallothionein, what's that? What binds up metals? What's important to know is that cortisol binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. So that when you go into a state of fear, we have adrenaline pumping iron into your body, trying to run from the bear, from the psyops bear, and it's shutting down your copper status, which is killing your immunometabolism, your immune system, as you so aptly pointed out. And people don't know that it's just these two simple metals that are being completely messed with by this completely fictitious psyops that's manipulated by a few people at the top of the global pecking order.
Yeah.
And as you say, when you start talking, most people can't believe it's happening. It's easier to fear the people than convince them that they've been feared.
Yeah.
That's what we're up against. And people, what I'm absolutely stunned by as I, you know, continue to do my research, and I think you, Ben, more than anyone on the planet, know how disciplined I am about the research.
Yes.
God love you for all your hours to keep up with me. But at the end of the day, really, the only reason why I'm publishing a book that should be out probably later this summer is so that when I say, please get more copper in your diet, I can have a 300-page book to back it up with all sorts of citations and all sorts of nomenclature to let people know that they are being fooled and that they don't realize that over the last 100 years, specifically, there's been a complete manipulation of the farming system, the food system, the pharmaceutical system to completely cause bioavailable copper to become MIA and therefore allow iron to take over the body. And what's useful to know, and I've been looking for this citation, but it's a fascinating juxtaposition of truth, is that in 1928 at the University of Wisconsin, Drs. Hart, Steenbach, Waddell, and LVM recorded that when you deny an animal copper in its diet, iron accumulates in the liver. They were able to see this in mice that were being fed a manipulated diet that had very little copper. Instead of 100 units of copper, they were getting 4 units of copper. So that's basically there's no copper in the diet. And that was 1928, and there's been repeated demonstrations of that. But what's important is that just a few months ago, I'm sorry, I know it's late, it was March of 2021, so it's old news, right? But Kim and Gonzalez and their colleagues did a very important study of lysosomes, and those are the stomachs of our cells, and they play a particularly important role in the liver cells. But the lysosome has a little doorway. If that doorway gets messed with, then we got problems with regulating what that stomach does. And what they wanted to do was see when we feed these mice, I don't know if they're the same mice, I doubt it, because they probably died back in 1928. But in any event, we're going to take mice, we're going to feed them the same diet, not 100 units of copper, 4 units of copper. We're going to look at 10 different genes. We're going to look at 4 genes that regulate iron. We're going to look at 4 genes that regulate zinc. And we're going to look at 5 genes that regulate copper status in these mice. And we're going to see which ones, if any, get turned on by copper deficiency. And only one popped up. And it's called FTL1. FTL1 is the gene to produce what's called ferritin light chain. And what that gene does is it just gobbles up iron that's accumulating in a copper-deficient diet. And so that sounds like, wow, that's great. That's a good thing, right? Well, up to a point, because there's two forms of ferritin, light chain, heavy chain. And what makes heavy chain so special is it allows iron to get out of the protein so it can be reused, but that requires copper, ding, ding, ding. And if the ferritin heavy chain isn't there, there's no iron egress. So what we have is a near century-long process to prove that Drs. Hart, Steenbach, Waddell, and Elvian were right back in 1928, that has been entirely ignored by the scientific and clinical community, that now we have clinical genetic proof that iron is accumulating in our liver, because that's where the FTL1 expresses, especially in the liver. And now we know that when we're in a state of fear, we are building iron in our body, which is totally destroying the energy production in our mitochondria, totally destroying the immunometabolism function of our immune system, totally destroying our capacity to think, because it takes energy and ATP to process your surroundings. And so people who are operating out of fear lack the cure. How do we spell cure? C-U-R-E, so we can see the symbol for copper, which is entirely the cure. And, oh, by the way, in addition to the toxic recommendations to use zinc, ascorbic acid, and vitamin D, wink, wink, which will destroy the bioavailability of copper, then we have the absurdity of using antibiotics, which was done in the beginning of 2020, only to be exceeded by the insanity of a shot that destroys ceruloplasmin. Mm. So I think people need to really step back and really begin to think about the fact that we've all been feared by the system, and that the police state, also called mainstream media, is nothing more than the equivalent of the Gestapo that ran the police state in Germany 70-some years ago. We should go, whatever it is, 80 years ago. People got to wake up. We got to wake up to the reality of what we're facing. And people who are under stress need to be able to metabolize their environment. And there's only one way you can metabolize your environment. You've got to be able to produce ATP in the mitochondria, and that organelle is a power grid. Is entirely copper dependent. And the fact that people don't know that and their practitioners don't know that is an entirely engineered reality, part of the PSYOP that started about 100 years ago with the advent of World War II.
Yeah.
There. Thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
Well, I feel better and you do too. So we're going to take a break. Then we can come back and take a deep breath and calmly discuss more literature to encourage people on building their resiliency, building their resistance to the germ. Terrain theory trumps the germ theory.
And the tragedy, as you said, Dr. Ben, is that if this conversation were put on YouTube, it would be deplatformed.
Yeah. Well, we keep putting it up and we keep getting shut down and warned and, you know, but we're just going to keep doing it. And we've got a Rumble channel now. If people don't know, these will be archived over there. And, of course, our shows are archived on our website, veritasmedical.com. And speaking of germ theory, terrain theory, there's this other theory called conspiracy theory. And if people are new to the show, I guarantee you that's what's going off in their mind. Well, why would that be? Why would that term go off in their mind? Because they've been trained to go there. Whenever they hear something that's so just dark and crazy, unbelievable, there's no way this could be true. And I tell people, just go look up who came up with the term conspiracy theory. And what you'll find, it was the CIA. And there's a great book, Professor Lance DeHaven Smith, a peer-reviewed book published by the University of Texas Press, where he goes into this. And the name of his book is Conspiracy Theory in America. And if the CIA came up with this basically to shut up skeptics by branding them conspiracy theorists, just to discredit them and shut them up. So if anybody, any I'll say media outlet in particular, newspaper, TV show, commentator, late night comedian, whoever is using the term conspiracy theorist, I would be very, very suspect, and probably I'd just turn that off. And I'll throw two other terms in there with that. The word quack, invented by the AMA back in the day, and the term anti-vaxxer. You know, Robert Kennedy tells a great story. He spent 20 years trying to get mercury out of the water, out of our rivers and oceans, so the fish could be healthier, so pregnant girls could eat them, and we could all eat them, trying to decrease pollution. That was his big thing, and everybody was totally fine with him. Then multiple moms came to him with piles, stacks of literature showing, hey, if you really want mercury to not get into pregnant moms, quit focusing your attention on the river and the fish. Focus them on the vaccines and look at the amount of mercury these ladies get in a flu shot, for instance. And it just blew him away. And, of course, that's the rest is history. Now he's very much a proponent of informed consent and honesty in the medical research when it comes to vaccines, risk versus benefit. But my point is, no one ever called me anti-fish back then when he was trying to get mercury out of the fish, but now all of a sudden he's an anti-vaxxer. And he'll tell you he's not anti-vax, he's pro-health. And if there's things in the vaccine that could induce harm and more harm than good, true informed consent will tell you the risk versus benefit. And if the risk outweighs the benefit for your particular case, then you should be allowed to decline. Anyways, those three terms, watch out, red flags, turn off that media if they're using the term anti-vaxxer, quack, or conspiracy theorist would be my opinion.
Ben, real quick, Ben, I know we got to go to break. Just so people know the history of the word quack, it was not invented by the AMA. Mm-hmm. It goes back to William Harvey, who in the 1600s was the physician in London who figured out that veins and arteries are connected. And it was a very controversial theory about circulation that totally violated the whole prevalence of Galen's theory, who was a famous Greek physician. And as this became very disruptive in the College of Physicians and Surgeons in the 1600s, and as a reality that Harvey was right, they knew he was right. The response by the physicians who were part of the college said, I would rather be wrong with the college than right with the quack. It was in the 1600s that term was first coined.
Mm. That reminds me of the physician, I always mispronounce his name, but in the 1800s, Ignaz Semmelweis. He's the one that figured out, hey, we need to wash our hands between walking up from the morgue in the gross anatomy lab to the labor and delivery unit where we're delivering these babies. There's like a 50% maternal death rate just from the germs on the hands of these physicians coming from the morgue to deliver a baby. And the moms would get an infection in their womb and die. And he said, let's wash our hands. And the death rate in his maternity ward plummeted. And, of course, everybody thought he was crazy, too, and it really sent him to a psych ward where he died. So, I mean, people need to just, like you said, Morley, if we don't understand history, we'll repeat it. So sometimes these things just seem so unbelievable, but we need to step back, take a critical look at it, be more discerning, and see that not everybody in the world is righteous, unfortunately. Okay. We're with Morley Robbins. You can check his stuff out, RCP for Root Cause Protocol, RCP123.org. Morley's book is coming out, hopefully, July. We'll talk about that when we get back to from the break. Y'all stick with us. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Welcome into You're the Cure. Once again, right here on the radio, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with You're the Cure. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archived programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical.com. All right, right back at it to here on today's broadcast.
Yeah, we are here with Morley Robbins, RCP123.org. Talking all things Root Cause Protocol, which really the Root Cause Protocol is the science, the research, which you have to go back 100 years. We get to go back 100 years, and we get to go international journals, too. It's hard to find the truth in modern American journals, unfortunately. But that's what Morley spends his days doing, combing through the literature. So it's great to have some scientific basis for really the four pillars of nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. Just eat like your ancestors ate. Unfortunately, as Morley did briefly mention, our agricultural system has been corrupted, deceived. It's ruined the topsoil and the land. The mineralization of our food is gone down tremendously, so the bioavailable copper's not really there. High fructose corn syrup demolishes the availability of that. Roundup, glyphosate demolishes the bioavailable copper, and of course in a body full of excess iron from iron fortification. It's just crazy. We can get more into that. Morley, I was going to just mention, though, the Salk Institute had a study come out. It's been a couple weeks, maybe. And basically, they were saying the spike protein itself is what's really causing all the symptoms we're calling COVID. All this inflammatory response is a direct result of the spike protein, not just a viral illness. I got a virus and it gives me a runny nose and an inflammatory response just from the general viral whatever. It's the actual spike protein. And so that raises big concerns with people that have had the jab, the shot, the gene therapy injection, this new medical technology, which, by the way, I do want to mention, I didn't get to mention it in my testimony. I think I've said it on the show before. Our level, the bar, or index of suspicion, I'll say, we should have a very, very high index of suspicion, because this type of therapy, mRNA gene therapy, and coronavirus vaccines have historically failed miserably. They did, RSV is similar to coronavirus. They tried that back in the 60s, skipped animal trials, gave it to like 35 kids. Two of the kids died, and the rest got super sick. Fast forward to the early 2000s, after SARS-CoV-1 outbreak and MERS, three different coronaviruses early in the 2000s, all these countries got together, the U.S., the U.K., a lot of European countries, China and others, spent millions and millions, maybe billions, of dollars trying to develop vaccines. There were 30 different candidates back there in the early 2000s. They narrowed it down to four, and then they took those four candidates, but they put them through animal trials. And in those animal trials, it was a disaster. And so none of those coronavirus vaccines went on to market. And disaster meaning, in one study, every single ferret died from this enhanced immune response. So they got the injection. They mounted antibodies. They could measure these antibodies in the animals, so they thought they were successful. But then they exposed the animals to the wild virus, and they had this overwhelming immune response, and antibody-dependent enhancement, ADE is what we're calling it now, I think. And it's so overwhelming, they died. And it's consistently, the animal studies have been horrendous, so it never came to market. And then Moderna comes around about 10 years ago. They're new, a new company, modified RNA, Moderna. And they were actually trying to use this gene therapy to bring genetic information into people with a very, very rare genetic disease where they were just missing certain genetic elements. And so they were trying this new delivery mechanism, mRNA, encapsulated by these little liposomal nanoparticles. And I believe it was 2017 or 2018, their investor prospectus, where they had to tell the investors, give them an update of where they are with their company. And they basically said, we're abandoning this technology. We can't figure it out. It's too dangerous. Anytime we get the dose high enough to actually affect the cell and bring this genetic material into the cell and cause the cell to make the gene, whenever we get the dose high enough, it's too lethal. It's too toxic. So when we lower the dose to a less lethal dose, it's not effective. So we're abandoning it. It's way too tricky of a technology. And that was just 2 or 3 years ago. So that's the history. So all of a sudden now, boom, we've got this race to make a gene therapy technology. We're going to call it a vaccine. As Morley said, it's not. The FDA definition of vaccine is something that will infer immunity and prevent transmission. And by the very admission of the drug companies in their trials, they say this is not designed to prevent infection or transmission. But anyways, it's a legal term of the FDA. It doesn't meet that legal definition of vaccine. But all of a sudden, we had this new rush to do this, and here we go. We got emergency authorization, and we're supposed to all just go out and do it, is the perception. and you're crazy if you don't. Well, wait a minute. We've had a 20-year history of failed attempts, and all of a sudden it's, we're supposed to trust it. So at the very least, if you feel like you want to do this and give your body to science and donate your body to science and for the betterment of humanity, you know, if there's no known treatments, well, heck yeah, someone's got to sacrifice themselves. Let's fully know the informed consent nature of this, and then you voluntarily, and then let's track it. I had my nurse in my clinic tell me her daughter's friend just went through a drive-through pharmacy, got the jab, and immediately, before she's even out of the parking lot, was having a full-body reaction. They sent her over to park in an empty parking slot and said, we'll be right over there. And I don't know what they gave her or did to her, Benadryl or what, or just watched her. I don't know. But my point is, who's tracking any of this? You would think there would be a robust tracking system. I want to know every single person that's had this jab, this shot. And I want to know to this day, from day one till now, what's happened, and get a very, very hardcore analysis of this. We're not doing that. This self-reporting system is blowing up with over 100,000 severe, significant reactions and over 4,000 deaths now reported, which, by the way, CDC is saying there's no relationship. And that's a big red flag to me. I mean, if someone's going to take the time to go on VAERS and report it, a nurse or doctor in a hospital setting, we should probably take a lot harder look at it. And some of these reports, when you read them, I mean, it's immediate. It's within hours. And some of the reports are more like within days. And you can go on Health Impact.
Ben?
Yes, Morley.
I was just going to say, building on what you're talking about, you and I both saw the news program where they were revealing the package insert.
Yeah.
It was the size of a poster that had no information on it.
And completely blank. Yeah.
Completely blank. Being the conspiracy analyst that I am, I'm not a theorist, I'm an analyst, but being a conspiracy analyst, I'm wondering if we're playing Russian roulette with this shot, and the ones, when you open up the package and the insert is blank, it's just water, and then the one with the filled out insert has also, you know, 1-point font and it's 10,000 pages of information, is the chemical that's going to destabilize the immune system. Is there any possibility that that's what they're doing, is they've created this random Russian roulette, and that's why it's so haphazard?
It's a good question, Morley, and I'd say at this point anything's possible. People using that term conspiracy theorist, and someone told me this weekend, then you can use the term coincidence theorist. All this is just coincidence. You're a coincidence theorist. I mean, at some point, there's no more coincidences. I mean, I don't know. It is real hit and miss. And someone could say, well, 4,000 deaths or even 40,000 deaths, if 4,000 is just 1%. Out of 150 million or 200 million, I don't know what we're up to now. Vaccines have been administered. That's only, you know, a small percentage. And the point is, there's a way to inform people, and there's a way to risk stratify. There's one Dr. Hunan who clearly shows that you're at a 2 to 3-fold increased risk of adverse events if you've already acquired natural immunity. If you had COVID and have natural immunity, which most likely you'll be immune for life. We know the SARS-CoV-1 people 17 years later still had a robust immunity. But if you have natural immunity, which is 58% of Texans, according to Harvey Risch, probably the top epidemiologist in the country, then you're at a 2-3-fold increased risk of adverse event with no benefit at all. That should be explained. Every single drive-through pharmacy should be explaining that to people. But anyways, the Salk Institute, Morley, they put out the paper, spike proteins actually doing the damage, and they mentioned in the paper the mitochondria is getting damaged by this process. And when the mitochondria is damaged, you can't mount a good immune response, and you can't turn off the inflammation. You can't heal yourselves. Thoughts on that?
So I think the most striking study that I saw last year, I guess this was July of 2020, by Dr. Pericone, P-E-R-R-I-C-O-N-A. Anyone who's interested in iron research, go to Italy. they have the command of iron metabolism. It runs circles around the rest of the globe. But Dr. Perricone did a study of COVID patients. And in the study, what they discovered is that the patients had a ferritin, serum ferritin, over 6,000. So what you and I are trying to do is get clients around 20. And so when we're talking about serum ferritin at 6,000, it's an all-out system assault by serum iron, which is a marker of inflammation. And what does that really mean? Well, again, back to my earlier comments, when the stomachs of the liver cell, the lysosome, can't break down the ferritin protein as it's supposed to, the iron gets discharged into the liver cell, and the protein that's showing up in the blood, it's called serum ferritin, it's a variation of that ferritin light chain that was studied by Kim and Gonzalez. And so when you've got a serum ferritin of 6,000, it's an oh my gosh moment, because there's a serious sign of iron dysregulation in this body, very likely triggered by this spike protein that's affecting this enzyme called ACE2. And what is ACE2? It's angiotensin converting enzyme 2. And what we're trying to do is turn off angiotensin in the body. So why would we need to do that? Because angiotensin and iron create absolute chaos in the body. Well, I think the most telling symbol for what we're living in now is, I don't know if you studied this when you were younger, Dr. Ben, but there was a famous magazine called Mad Magazine, and very fun. I'm sure Wade remembers it. I'm not sure that it was part of your generation, but the cartoon was Spy versus Spy, and it was one black spy versus a white spy. Well, the black spy is iron, and the white spy is copper, and angiotensin is a hormone that really whips iron into a frenzy in the body, and its opposite is called adiponectin. Adiponectin is another hormone that people have never heard of, and maybe a lot of your physician friends have never heard of either. But adiponectin has a relationship with copper. And so we have this age-old battle. Again, we're back to iron and copper. We're back to mTOR versus AMPK. And as we've discussed, maybe privately, I'm not sure we talked about it on the air, but we're back to Cain and Abel. Mm-hmm. Cain was the farmer. Abel was the shepherd. And again, who killed who? We know who killed who. And so iron killed copper. And we've been fighting this battle on this planet since the beginning of time. Regardless of when you start the clock, it's been the same concept. And I think what the spike protein is doing is it's distorting the natural regulation of the ACE2 enzyme, because it's violently altering the level of serum ferritin in the bloodstream. And when serum ferritin shows up, people need to understand that those are empty shotgun shells, which means that the liver is overwhelmed with iron. And what does that iron do? It shuts down the mitochondria of the liver. And what does that do? It shuts down the engine of the immune system, because a lot of the immune system is keyed off of the vitality and energy production of the mitochondria of the liver. And what's interesting to note is that the liver cells only have 2,000 mitochondria per cell, as opposed to the kidney cells, which have 4,000, and the heart cells have 10,000. It's amazing. It's, you know, in the scheme of things, it doesn't have a lot of mitochondria, but it has way more than the average cell, which has 500. So again, we're back to energy deficiency is what decimates our immune system. If we can't make energy in the most important organ of the body to regulate the immune system called the liver, well, then we're going to have a meltdown. And that's basically what this flu is. I don't know what they call it, but it's a flu. It's a variant of the flu. And it causes upper respiratory distress. Well, anytime you've got upper respiratory distress, I can assure you that's a classic clinical sign of low bioavailable copper. Whether we're talking about the flu, pneumonia, any kind of lung cancer, all of those conditions, the whole spectrum of those conditions, are a classic indication of poor copper status driving poor energy production in the tissue that is the most intimate with the 21% oxygen that's in the air. Again, oxygen, we can't live without it, right? But we can't age without it either. Mm-hmm. As soon as that oxygen can't be activated by the mitochondria, it turns into an agent of death. It turns into an oxidant, and it causes corrosion in tissues all over the body. And so people just need to understand that if all this terminology is too confusing, we're back to spy versus spy. We're back to black and white. And we've got to enhance our body's bioavailable copper through the core four and through the root cause protocol nutrients, and we've got to lower the footprint of the bad guy, because we're all teeming with iron. And for those listeners who think they have iron deficiency anemia, no, you don't. You have iron stuck in your tissue. It's just not showing up in the blood. Why is it not showing up in the blood? Because the doorman to let the iron out of the recycling cells is a copper doorman. Can't open the door without copper. And so then the iron builds in the cells, and it becomes a focal point for chaos and inflammation in the tissue. And no one's the wiser because they don't see the iron in the blood. And that's the real classic conflict we've got going on. So this ACE2 enzyme being whipped up by the SARS spike protein is not a good thing. It's a very toxic thing. And so that spike protein is hijacking the individual's immune system, which is a subset of this overall PSYOP that's hijacking humanity.
Yeah. And just a reminder to the listeners, the warning signs that you are at risk to be taken down by one of these germs like coronavirus or flu or the trillions of others that are out there, the warning signs that your cells aren't making energy and they're making too much exhaust, you've got this copper-iron imbalance and the bad guys are winning, would be hypertension, migraines, chronic fatigue, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, all the chronic diseases, it's the same root cause. These are just different manifestations in different body systems and organs of the same issue. And who succumbs to COVID? 94% of the people die from COVID are ones that had all these chronic diseases. These are the warning lights going off, guys. And you don't even have to be officially diagnosed. Just a nagging, headache and chronic fatigue, whatever. This is the point we always make. It all boils back down to this thing. 100 years ago, we were all healthy. We were resistant to tuberculosis, is what Weston A. Price found. Tuberculosis way more deadly than COVID. And there are villages that were totally immune to it, totally resistant to it. That means tuberculosis was there, but they weren't succumbing to it because they had robust immunity, because they were eating ancestrally, meaning they had their bioavailable copper. And they had their retinol, which is vitamin A. And they had their magnesium and all the trace minerals and everything else. It's in the food. But fear triggers this whole cascade of events, like Morley started the show with. You'll go acidic when you're in a state of fear because of that sympathetic dominance. You breathe too much and you clench these muscles, and the cortisol and the adrenaline, and you just shift to acidic, and that attracts the excess iron that you have because you've been eating standard American for 50 years. And then this whole cascade of mitochondrial dysfunction. So it connect them all, connect all these dots back to the basics, and that's what the root cause protocol is all about. All right, Morley, thank you. Appreciate all your insights. Guys, we'll do it again. You're welcome, Morley. Sorry to cut you off there. We can't wait for your book to come out. Can't wait to do this again, too. Everybody stick with us next week. We'll be back. And remember, no fear. you know, the real enemy's not vaccine hesitancy, it's not coronavirus. And if you drill down into your immune system and terrain even, it's fear. And there's no need for fear. The most quoted verse in the Bible is don't fear, fear not, thou shalt not fear. So be at peace.
I was just going to ask you to point that out. Isn't it like 470 times?
Yeah. I don't have the exact number. I think 476 maybe. And that's the real deal. That's what it all boils down to. Our decisions, take captive our thoughts, control those thoughts and line them up with the truth. There is evil in the world, and the root of all of it really is man's ability to choose. Because we have choice and free will, we can choose to go the right way or the wrong way. We can choose good or evil. And sometimes we, out of deception, choose evil, don't mean to. But some people do it because they mean to, because they're just so far off base. But this ability to choose is what it all boils down to. God, you know, people ask me all the time, why would God let all this evil? Well, if we're all just robots, then there's would be no such thing as the greatest virtue of all, love. For there to be love, which is God. God is love, and He wants us to all be one, and walk in oneness, in love, representing Him, reflecting Him as love. There's no such thing as love if there's no choice. We have to have choice, but when there's choice, we can take a wrong turn. So repent and go the other way. Go back to righteousness and truth and love and oneness. So anyways, we'll end it on that. Everybody be encouraged. Trust God, trust the immune system, trust the amazing design of that immune system, but steward it and walk in the truth and be discerning. Okay, rcp123.org is Morley's website, veritasmedical.com. You can check out the archive shows there. See you next week. Thank you. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Thanks again. Appreciate that. Stick around. We got more to go right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM.